This is the examination of the hidden human condition.
You're listening to the Hidden Killers podcast.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
That it is. We're still talking with Susan Constantine, trial consultant and body language expert, and Phil Waters, retired detective and president CEO of Kindred Spirits Investigations and Security. We were just discussing the ridiculous amount of snot that we saw exuded from the head of Alec Murdaugh during his trial, Phil.
I have never seen
the
flow of snot out of someone's nose like he exhibited on that stand. So what does that tell me as the interviewer, that person that's seen these contrasting emotions or the expression of those things and through crying? What I think, and this is just my observation, assessment based on my experience in interviewing, is that moment on the stand, and he has another bad habit of nodding in affirmation when he's being told what happened to Maggie and Paul.
Yes.
It was very, very slight, but when Waters was describing what had happened to them, he is nodding in affirmation. Now, that is huge.
Yeah.
I know when I'm in the room and I'm going into a narrative with the person I'm talking to and they are agreeing with me, then I know we are headed in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so he never, you would think he would be going, you know, when Creighton Waters is saying, you know, you this and that, and you'd think he would be shaking his head back and forth like, no, that wasn't me.
Yeah.
But he is affirming it with these very slight head nods. And they were very slight. But then when he gets to the point where, and he also said, I would never do anything
to hurt
intentionally.
I would never intentionally.
Yes.
So he uses the L-Y words, and I teach in my classes, watch for the L-Y words, because when you hear one before the statement, they're trying to qualify and justify what they're about to tell you. Uh-huh. So when he uses a word like, I would never intentionally hurt Maggie and Paul. Well, so... what does it mean if you unintentionally hurt them?
Mm-hmm.
So you have the converse. That would be the next question.
Exactly.
So that gives him a way out. So if you're sitting in the interview room, that's giving him a way out. So then you get him to explain and so forth and so on. I even noticed in the interview when they were in the room that he went into what we call surrender a couple, two or three times. Now, the problem was that the agent either didn't pick up on it or he didn't do anything with it. But when you see someone go into surrender, which is they're going to bow their head, it may be slight or it may be very pronounced, but they're going to come up with one of three responses. They're either going to come up and deny. They're going to come up and negotiate. They're going to say something like, well, what would somebody get if they got, you know, convicted for something like this? Or what would, you know, a person be looking at, that kind of thing? Or they're going to come up with an admission. If they come up with an admission, then you're on the way to getting to as close to the truth as you can get. So, but that's not slinging on the stand. I think at that point, there may have been a moment where he became overwhelmed with the reality of what he had done. Now, a lot of people will disagree with me and say, no, you know, he's just a good actor. Well, I don't know anybody that can act that good and produce that much snot. I just don't know anybody like that. And so I think that at that moment in time, that the full weight of what he had done and the anguish that it caused is what got us the response of really sobbing and the snot coming out and the true emoting in that setting.
It was like he was tapping into his real emotions of if he has them, of the sadness and the horrific reality of what had happened, still saying I didn't do it, but he's using those emotions and trying to present them to the jury as this is my sorrow because they're gone because someone killed them, where it's more so it's maybe feeling some sorrow because they're gone, but they're dead, but because of what he was capable of doing and destroying his family.
I don't think he was even done. You know, Tony, I don't think that was an act. I don't think he was trying to. I think it overcame him.
Yeah,
I think he was overwhelmed in that moment, and it just happened.
Okay,
I don't know that he had any really ulterior motive. I think it probably when he's sitting there thinking, he's thinking to himself, "This is helping. This may be helping me at some point." But I just think what we saw there was just raw emotion, based on him hearing. What he had done. He was being confronted with what he had done. And it was just, he was not able to keep that under control. That was just something that overwhelmed him. And now he is truly, when he realizes what he has done, the anguish and the pain that he's caused with his family, shoot the community there, everybody involved in this thing. I think he just got overwhelmed in that moment. And that was the only time through his entire testimony, in my observation, that you saw the true emotion of Alex Murdaugh. All this other stuff, anything before and after, that's all practiced. That's all lawyer stuff. And presentation, and that stuff is all presentation to the jury. I think the jury, well, I know they did. I mean, obviously they came back with a conviction, but when this was all said and done and the jury was out deliberating, I said, there are two pieces of evidence. There's one witness and one piece of evidence that is going to cause this jury to come back with a conviction. And when they came back in less than 3 hours, I said, he's done. In my experience, anytime a jury comes back in less than 4 hours, it is not good for the defense. And he, unless the prosecution is just abysmal, but in most cases, it is not good for the defense. And I said then, before they came back, that the piece of evidence that's going to convict him is going to be that videotape that Paul took that he wasn't aware of. And the one witness is going to be him. And when they came back and they interviewed one of the jurors shortly thereafter, what do you think he said were the two pieces that caused them to convict him as quickly as they did? That video and his testimony.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah, without a doubt. Susan, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, but there's a lot of, you know, I'm just, you know, we've talked so much about this case. I think he brings such a great, reality to it, just from just so much experience there. What I just kind of hitchhike off from what he's saying, and he was talking about those little micro head nods. That's exactly what we call leakages, right? They're not those head nods that are up and down, you know, like when you're trying to affirm something that you understand, yes, you know, in a conversation. There are ones where he, like what Phil was talking about, you can't control them. That's the part where Dr. Paul Ekman talks about some micro head nods. It's when you're, did you do it or did you have anything to do with it? Or when somebody's describing the event and how it happened and you're in, and the other person's just slightly like their head's barely moving. It's just moving forward like a nod. That is in itself a huge indicator. That small little piece was such a big deal because that's an affirmation, like what Phil was talking about. So that's what Ekman found in detecting deception. And hitchhiking off from what he was talking about intentionally, I think everybody kind of picked that up. But it's interesting how what happens is that what he does is say he thinks that either can control his demeanor, like to appear really upset and distressed, et cetera, and then think he's going to be able to match the words with it simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
That was his biggest problem. He couldn't keep it up. He couldn't keep the story up, because what happens with him and a lot of liars are they're either focused on their behavior and not, and or they're focused on their story. Mm-hmm. But that right and left brain collides in the middle, right? And so it's impossible over any length of time to be able to control both parts of the brain. It's impossible. So that's where these leakages come out, again, intentionally. So, you know, people mean what they say what they mean. So the brain knows, and subconscious mind knows, that what occurred, he knew that he had murdered them. So then he minimizes what he did, and that's why he used the word intentionally. Mm-hmm. That came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
That was something that he didn't plan to say. That was that subconscious guilt. And then he says hurt. And I know Phil probably has seen this too. It's like even with sexual battery cases, they never really call it out. Mm-hmm. They don't say, I never killed my son or I never killed my wife. They use that word hurt. And they do the same thing in sexual assault cases. I would never hurt that little girl. I love that little girl. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't name it. They can't bring themselves there. He would have been much more truthful, appear more truthful if he would have said, no, I did not kill, or I didn't kill my wife, or I didn't kill my son. Mm-hmm. And then the other part of those contractures. So we look at I did not versus I didn't. Mm-hmm. And they just found just with research that proven liars often will use I did not versus I didn't, because I did not is too much thinking. When you know you didn't do it, number one, you become angry. You know, I didn't see him becoming angry. I saw him just break down, and like what Phil was talking about, lots of snot, lots of emotion. And I do agree, and Phil and I've talked about this, I think that when that realization came in and he had that visual picture, when he was hearing testimony from some of the other witnesses and the crime scene examiners and walking through this horrific scene, and you would see him break down and he would begin to just rock, and you could see his mouth quivering up in your, that is distress. That is pure sadness. Pure sadness. I mean, all of the right expressions, facial expressions, and based on the facial action coding system, were firing like they were supposed to. So I think that what Phil was talking about, he would visually go back to that place, recall it, and he did have a physiological response from it. And I think it was remorse and guilt and the realization of what he'd done. I think that he may have thought it out, but the realization of it actually happening, and then now becoming present world, mm-hmm. now knowing he did it, I think there was a lot of guilt and shame and remorse. And I think it was authentic. And I said that a lot on TV, different stations that I said the emotions mm-hmm. a lot of times were authentic.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Lewski.
I want to go in and get your guys' knowledge and insights as to what we've seen thus far with Lori Daybell. There's been many videotaped discussions with her and the bit that we've seen in court. We're going to get into that with Susan and Phil in just a few. So be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss that part of the conversation right here. My name's Tony Brewski. Stay with us.